Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 508. Listen to this. Dark patterns, gone medieval, and professional development changes. We've got all of that and some things for your classroom. So without further ado, here is the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest kosher host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm well. I'm back from my travels and able to do a show this week. So, and who knows what we're going to talk about? Because
if you've listened to the show, you understand the meaning and the power of that statement.
That's right. We have show notes, but we'll see how closely we follow them today.
More like show suggestions.
That's right. Hey, did you hear about the person who had to work really hard to make it through wooden boat building school?
Wooden boat building school? No, I did not.
They had to go through a lot of hardships.
Got it. Got it.
Did you hear about the employee who spent the entire travel budget on front row tickets to Cats?
Front row tickets to Cats? No. Yeah. No, I didn't.
Yeah, I thought there was a per diem.
Got it. Per diem. Yep. There's an arc here, I see.
Yes, there is. Oh, certainly you know about Karl Marx, right?
I know about Karl Marx.
Yep, but very few people know about his sister, Anya.
Oh?
Yeah, she invented the starting pistol.
I see.
Uh-huh. And you hear it as well. you know, everyone should meet with a financial advisor. Should have a good financial advisor. And trapeze artists are no different at all, right?
Really?
And a financial advisor was meeting with a trapeze artist and asked, what is their net worth? The response? I couldn't live without it.
Oh, sure.
What
sure.
is their net worth? Mm-hmm. Net worth? Net worth, yeah. Uh-huh. Hey, I just wanted to give a shout-out to all the hard work that librarians have done this year. Ooh, sorry about that. Get it? Librarians, shout-out?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, Madam Librarian.
and then my pet mouse Elvis died last night.
Oh, no. What's your computer going to do?
Now this joke is going somewhere completely different. He was caught in a trap. Hey, we've also got some visual jokes for you over at middleschoolmatters.com. So head on over there where you can get the show notes, whether we talk about them or not. And some additional jokes there as well. So another thing that you can get is that you can get a link directly to the Middle School Science Minute as well. And this one is on stall catchers. Which is all about speeding up Alzheimer's disease research. So this is really neat. I'm just going to turn this one over to the wonderful, the fantastic Mr. Dave Bidlowski in the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the March-April 2021 issue of The Science Teacher, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the Citizen Science section written by Jill Nugent. And she wrote an article entitled Accelerating Alzheimer's Research with Stall Catchers. She said that Alzheimer's disease affects nearly 50 million people worldwide, and there is no known cure or treatment. Researchers are investigating connections between reduced blood flow in the brain and Alzheimer's. Stall Catchers, created by the Human Computation Institute at Cornell University, is an online citizen science game designed to speed up Alzheimer's disease research. Stall Catchers was designed to help comprehensively examine the abundance of data that researchers have gathered. The project invites the global citizen science community to play games online in an effort to gamify the analysis of data. In 1 hour of playing the game, citizen scientists are able to analyze what it takes scientists 1 week to accomplish in a lab setting. The project goal is to accelerate Alzheimer's research. The task of the participants is to play an online game and contribute to scientific research. And the best science discipline for this, of course, is life science. On the project website, which is stallcatchers.com, there are a number of helpful resources, videos, and tutorials for students. The project additionally features an educator resource page and a blog that highlights the science behind the Citizen Science Project. The game can be played on any device, including tablets, smartphones, or laptops. Stalls in the brain clog blood vessels, reduce blood flow by one-third, and Cornell researchers have found a link between the presence of stalls and Alzheimer's. When students play Stall Catchers, they will essentially catch stalls by viewing and analyzing movie clips featuring the brains of mice with Alzheimer's disease. During the game, students will score the blood vessels as flowing or stalled. In the game, movie clips appear as a virtual microscope on the screen. Viewers will look for the movement of blood cells in flowing blood vessels. When flowing blood is not observed, players will indicate the presence of clogged vessels or stalls. As students search for and catch stalls, they will accumulate points, build up their score, advance in levels, compete for leadership spots, and can even receive digital badges for their achievements in the game. Students find it incredibly exciting and rewarding to be able to play a role in this cutting-edge research that has the potential to save lives. Addressing Alzheimer's disease is a 21st century global health priority. Students can be part of this critical work and help to accelerate the research when they play Stall Catchers. Again, visit stallcatchers.com. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
All right, and I think it's really great that that Dave highlights things that the kids can get involved in and important work as well. So, hey, there's important work that's going to be done next year as well. And
yes,
we're coming to the close of this year. So, you know, we're doing lots of thinking about what's involved and what happens and, you know, what is next year going to look like? I know a lot of people are looking forward to summer and summer break. And I know that there's probably a lot of people that are going to be teaching summer school this year as well, because the whole kids are behind, kids need to get caught up, and the learning loss. And so those are popular beliefs, conversations, slash thoughts this year. So there's going to be probably a lot of summer schools from what I'm hearing. But I think some people are like, I need a break as well. Mm-hmm. So we haven't talked about this. Are you teaching summer school this year? Have you decided if you're teaching summer school? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I am not teaching summer school. Okay. I am years and years and years ago, I used to do it regularly because I was a sub, right? And I couldn't pick up extra days towards my retirement program, but I could make a few extra bucks during the summer. And plus, you know, it helped me get to know principals, teachers, you know, buildings, and kids. So I did it for those reasons. But I also told myself that, you know, if I could pull it off and do it, then I'm not going to teach summer school once I get a full-time job. And that's what I did, is I did not do it. It's also been a blessing, because I found that if I do the school thing during the summer school thing during the summer, I'm not really all that rested up, ready to go mentally refreshed for September for the long haul through the year. And I know I've noticed it makes a difference in how I approach my classroom, and I don't like it. Yeah. He was a student at one time, but he's my mentee, the teacher that I mentor, one of them. He and I had this conversation, and I had talked about, you know, my reasons for doing it. And he is an energetic guy, but this year I think has worn all of us out to the point where, you know, he even looked at me and said, "Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this." He's got a young family at home, and he wants to enjoy them, and that makes perfect sense. I know that districts have also been upping the pay in order to get people to try to get people to get excited about coming in for. Now, the state of Michigan wants 8 weeks of summer school, correct. And so we're getting around that by starting summer school 2 weeks before the school year ends. So the teachers still only have to do 6 weeks of the summer, and they get 2 or 3 weeks off for themselves. And that there, and then there are districts that are applying for waivers so that they can start the school year before Labor Day. So it might be, if you're doing summer school, you might get out, you might start your summer school by doing after school for 2 hours. And then, so your day is extended. And then you start doing summer school for 6 weeks in the summer, and they move the start date up, and you'll just walk right into doing regular school at the beginning of the year earlier than usual, which makes your year longer. So I'm not sure when we're going to be planning in some breaks for teachers. And I think that teachers are looking at that and saying, you know, one of the benefits of this job is that, you know, break in the summer. And I think I want to take it. I know I'm going to take it. And then there's some other teachers have talked about that. Now there's others that have turned right around and said, no. Oh, I am so teaching summer school because I can get some extra time towards retirement. And the pay is really good this year because districts have been having a hard time getting teachers, and they're bumping up the pay. And there's been I can't remember exactly where I saw the article, but there's a 44% reduction in the number of available teachers in the state of Michigan based just on graduation numbers.
Wow.
This year. And so there's, you know, we had a position open and we had one person apply for it. So they got it. Now, we got lucky because she's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But that's not always going to be true, right? And so I remember when I put in for a position years and years ago in a district, I knew the secretary who was working the desk. She goes, "Come here, I want to show you something." And she took me around behind, and she showed me this long countertop. And it had about a 12-inch stack of resumes and papers. And it went all the way down this countertop a good 10, 12 feet. And I said, "Wow, that's a lot of stack of papers." She goes, "Yeah." She goes, "You know that that position, you know, here in the district you put in for? That's all the people that were applying for it too." I mean, she was saying that's the competition.
That's the competition.
Yeah, and in the space of 20 years, we've gone to, man, I'll be lucky if I get one. So I think that's another thing too we're factoring here is, you know, it's getting harder and harder to find folks that are willing to do it.
And that seems to be something that is being talked about not only in terms of education, but in terms of a lot of jobs right now. Seems to be that there are employers who are searching for people. I remember when I graduated and there was the news events coming out saying we're going to be short a million teachers in Michigan. we weren't.
No,
we definitely weren't. The hype was not there. But I think what's different this time is I think it's actually accurate that there is there's not a overabundance of teachers looking for jobs, and there seems to be, and maybe it's just, you know, confirmation bias kind of thing, in that I'm paying attention to it, but it seems to me as though more and more people are retiring this year. And again, that very well could be confirmation bias, because, you know, that's I'm retiring in order to move to another state to be closer to the family, but so I don't know how much that plays into it or not, but it is. And I know that summer is a time when a lot of people really, really do kind of recharge. And I don't know that people under the general population understands how important that time can be. Because they're like, we work year-round, you know, too. It's like, well, yes, and different responsibilities, different vacation schedules, different lots of things, right? And I know that you do a lot of professional development during the summer as well. I mean, let's be. I think that it's important to point out that it's not like you are headed off to Aruba to sit on the beach for 3 months, right?
Right.
First of all, it's not really a three-month break.
No, not anymore.
And then secondly, I know that you do tons of work stuff, but it's more on your schedule and it's not directly interacting with kids, right? So you do a lot of prep work for the year. You do a lot of professional development to get better and better at what you do and keep up with trends and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, there was an interesting... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and one of the things you can do to keep up on professional development is listen to Middle School Matters.
Ooh, yes, that's true. I do. Every Saturday, I listen. I make it a regular part of my my routine. I even subscribe to the bonus coverage.
There you go.
The whole pre-show, and you know what? Maybe we'll put together an NFT for the pre-show conversation, and you can have access to that as well. I noticed when I was doing, so I did the conference, the Ireland UK Moodle Moot. I did that a few weeks ago. And one of the things I noticed about that conference was people were dropping in, doing a quick session, kind of like on their prep, and then leaving and coming back. And then when they left, they would say, you know, hey, yeah, that was great. And, you know, I'll be back. I'm going to listen to the recordings when they're done. I have to go to work right now, but I'll listen to the recordings. Yeah. And a lot of people were saying, yep, I ducked in for this because I could catch it, but I'm going to catch the recordings on the other stuff. And I'm thinking, huh, think about that. You could have a conference, but then you could turn it into Flex PD by just simply having the recordings. And then people then are able to access the PD for a longer period of time. So you're maximizing your conference revenue by having access to these things. And you could even put in a little thing that says, yes, that person spent that 50 minutes inside the conference presentation, and you know, we can provide a little badge or we can put a little certificate, but there's a way to say, hey, they've done that time for that conference time. We could offer maybe sketches or, you know, some sort of PD certification type of thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the direction that PD is moving in, because now it can be flex PD on your time and your associations can still have conferences and they can have physical meetups, right? You know, with those that are able. But maybe this is a whole new audience for a whole new opportunity for different organizations. And then now it doesn't need to be limited to states, right? Because now maybe it's maybe you're talking more like regions and pulling in from broader pools of conference attendees. I don't know. Yeah. I'm spitballing on that last one.
No, and I really do understand. I do really wonder where professional development is going, because we've long, long, long talked about student choice, and we've talked a little bit about teacher choice as well in terms of professional development and what do you need, and how do you line up what people think they need with what people, with what the district thinks or the organization thinks that people need, because those can be two separate things, right?
Yes.
You know, the organization may think you may think you need this, and a teacher, an individual teacher, may think that they need that. So how do you keep those in alignment, and how do you do that balance between those two things? But we've also now had a year and a couple months of different kinds of learning. And do we apply that to professional development? Or, you know, for me, it's kind of the same thing with general education. Do we go, whew, that's over with, and now this whole COVID-19 thing is over with, and, you know, people are vaccinated, and we're back to school, and kids are coming in. Is it kind of a, whew, that's over with, and now we can go back to what we were doing? Or is it a thing where we go, you know, we were doing some things differently and kids were able to show me that they could learn, and I was able to reach more kids, and kids were able to do things and demonstrate that they know things and learn things and interactive in different ways. And I want to keep taking advantage of that. And it's the same thing with professional development. You know, professional development, almost every conference that I know of did one of two things. Either they canceled or they switched to an online format. And so that leads to different types of experiences. And quite frankly, you learn things when you do them. So, you know, conferences had to learn some different skills. And part of the question is going to be, are we going to see hybrid conferences come up next? Right? So you can come in person and or you could attend virtually. And what does that look like? Because that needs a different skill set. It needs a different setup as well. And what is going to count for professional development? Are people going to go, you know what? What I really need is I just need to get the information. I'm a self-paced learner. I like to do that. And Michigan actually has some resources available for people through EduPaths that can be self-paced, and people can earn sketchies for them, and you know, there's a lot of opportunity there. Is that something that's going to grow or not? So I don't know where professional development is going, but I would like to see some more options that can meet teachers' needs and also the needs of the organization, because, you know, let's be honest, the organization is part of this as well. So
what if a bunch of teachers got together and, you know, threw together some PD stuff in Moodle, you know, and it was you know, centered, let's say, in Maine, for example. Right, you know, and what, you know, teachers start freelancing, developing, and putting together PD for, you know, for others, just in a consortium basis. You know, and you're paid a, you know, just a wee bit of that whole factoring thing. You know, the factoring, the whole process thing. I guess, I don't know. It opens up the possibility for a wider variety of. I mean, that would totally change the dynamics of. Here we have the edgy celebrities, right? You know, these are the ones who make their living by going around. And then also then you have a filtering problem. How do you figure out which ones are the ones that are the really, really good and have had a lot of practice at it, and the ones that are probably
still developing
or just, you know, shouldn't even be in education.
Right.
you know, so I mean, you're never going to lose those issues.
And those are all things that I think come into play. Because if you think about it, we have a lot of people that have been presenting regionally, right? Either state conferences or regional conferences for a variety of things. And they have some good stuff. And could they provide options for a larger audience? And I don't know. And again, you come to the question of how do you filter that? How do you make sure that this is good stuff and this works and is something that should be done as well. So, yeah. Those are good questions to ask. And for me, this also leads into a question of pedagogy for next year. So we've had a lot of teachers who have done something different. And this past year and a half, obviously, not due to their choice, but they've done something different. And I've been listening to people and listening to, you know, to conversations that are occurring across the country and that. And, you know, one of the things is I think there's a lot of, it seems to me I'm hearing a lot of teachers who are very interested in not doing this anymore, quote unquote. And it seems as though a lot of teachers want to go back to the way that it was. And I understand that because it is a hard mental shift to change from what used to be to what can be. But I just wonder how that's going to play out as well. You know, how many people are going to go, you know what, maybe we could do some video conferencing. Maybe we could video conference with, you know, the group that we have could video conference with a class across the state or a class in another country or a class across the city. You know, we have different options that people are now comfortable with. You know, what if I did allow students to show that they know something in a different way? Since we've got these devices, and you know, let's be honest. That's a bad saying. I have a tendency of saying that, and it's like, part of my problem is I'm usually too honest. But let's be upfront about it. There's going to be a lot of money available in education, right? There's the
yes.
Federal government is is putting some money out there, and some of it is rightfully to address some of the connectivity issues, and some of it is rightfully to address some of the access issues in order of getting kids devices that they can access, but devices are only part of the answer. I mean, you can give a kid a Chromebook or an iPad or a MacBook or any other tool, and it doesn't automatically lead to a change in what that kid is doing or can do. It just provides an opportunity, and we have to have teachers prepared to take advantage of that opportunity. And that's a tough one because this past year and a half has been very stressful for everybody, and you know, learning new things and pushing into new areas is an additional stress, and not everybody's ready to do that, so or to take that on. So you know, we'll have to see how it plays out. There's a There's a blog post that I'm working on that I've been kind of mulling around in my head about. I'm calling it the 20% solution. And I'm doing that purely so I can use the title of a 20% solution, which is a reference back to Sherlock Holmes and that as well. And that is that, you know, when it comes to technology, we focus on the tool, but the tool is really 20%. I completely made up 20%, by the way. This is not based on any research or anything. So for me, you know, the tool can be part of the answer, but it is just the, it's like the entry point. It's like the door. And it's like everything that comes after that is what really, really matters. So, and that brings, you know, that kind of brings me into assessment as well. 'Cause this is another thing that I've been thinking about, a lot is, you know, what does assessment look like? What should assessment look like? And we had a very lengthy pre-show conversation on this. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember at the end of the day, we can, even if we were to push assessment into a variety of methods, I think you rightly pointed out, yeah, that's great, but I get evaluated on the state test. And the state test is very heavily text-based. It's multiple choice. It's almost all multiple choice. And there's sometimes there's open-ended at questions, sometimes not. But so assessment, great. We could come up with a whole bunch of different ways for assessment, but are teachers really going to implement them knowing that their accountability is through text, through multiple choice? I mean, if you're evaluated on how well your kids do on a multiple choice exam, doggone it, you are going to teach kids how to take a multiple choice exam, and rightfully so. So, yeah. All right. And then you've also got a note about a bunch of different tools here as well.
Yeah, you said something in the pre-show that made me stop and think about, like, we throw, was just the old, I forget where it was. I think it was the Dodgeball movie where they said, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a dodgeball, right? And we throw a lot of tools at teachers. And I think that's what I envision is teachers dodging all these things coming at them, right? But we throw tools at teachers. And at what point do we say, what's the tipping point between, okay, here's all these tools flying at you, but you really only need these, you know, so because it's easy for a teacher to split a curricular focus by saying, oh, we've got all these different tools, right? Mm-hmm. But is there, and every teacher develops their teacher kit differently because you've got all these tools and it comes from all different places, conferences, tech coaches, you know, admins, you know, what districts are willing to pay for in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. At what point, where's the tipping point where we say, okay, I've thrown a bunch of tools at you. You know, translate that into pedagogy, translate that into skills for the student.
Yeah. And I frequently talk about that as the shiny object syndrome. People constantly switching to different tools because it's the tool of the day, because it's what's trending on Twitter, because they want to do something different. And I am absolutely passionate about this. If you are frequently switching tools, it makes it harder to get to depth. And, I'm starting to like the analogy of a door, by the way. The tool is a door, but then you got to walk through it, and you know you got to go through the maze and it. And I think that switching tools frequently can be the same thing. It's a great door to learning, but if you don't go through the door and go, you can't find the treasure if you don't go beyond the door. Probably pushing this metaphor way too far, but
I think we changed tool for key because the key opens the door. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out here. I'm following along.
But the concern that I have is we spend more time working on, oh, this shiny thing. Oh, yeah, I'm using this. But it's like, why are you using it? And there's a bunch of good stuff out there. There's a lot of good stuff out there. But if you just scratch the surface with everything, and then it's not really all that good. It's just another thing. And that's been my concern for quite a while is, you know, pick something, but know why you're picking it and develop some depth with it. And you know, I get to talk to people around around the country and a bunch of different technology people. And it's one of the complaints that I keep hearing is that, yeah, well, we got this, but I don't really know how to use it. Or, yeah, we put this in place, but nobody's really using it. Or sometimes it's like, did you know you can do this? You can? It's like, how long have you been using this? And you don't know that you can do this thing, which empowers kids to do things. So, I think it's interesting. And when you put this in there, one of the things that I thought of was I also thought of a parent that I had talked to once, and the parent had come in and said, "You're killing me." And I said, "How's this?" And this was a parent who had like three kids in the district. And they're like, I have like 24 different places I have to sign into. You want me to help support education, but I'm spending all night signing into places to find out. And, you know, you're absolutely right. And I think we need to be aware of that. I think we need to make sure that we have kind of a singular point of at least starting things. You can take advantage of different tools, but make sure it's organized and be cognizant that it doesn't become overwhelming for support. On the flip side of that, you know, I think we can let kids use different tools if they're comfortable with it. We don't have to be the expert in every tool. It's like, okay, just make sure you get it to me in a way that I can open it and use it. And because at times you want to make sure that you as a teacher don't have 24 different places to go to log into to check assignments either, right?
Oh, yes.
It's got to be something that's useful. So there's a couple of different aspects of the different tools. It's not that I am against any singular tool. I want to make sure I don't come off as like, you know, don't use anything, just use this. The issue for me is understand why it is that you're using something and doggone it, use it to its full potential so that kids can learn. So yeah. All right. I do have an advisory activity for you this week.
This is where it turns dark, folks.
This is where it turns dark. And I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at this or not.
I have not.
But this is called Dark Patterns. And what this is different choices that have been made electronically to kind of push people into taking certain actions or not taking certain actions. And I think this is important for kids to understand that this is kind of instructional design, psychology, lots of different things. And you can actually report dark patterns here as well. And I'm going to read a couple of the things here. There is a couple of them on made it difficult for me to unsubscribe. Instead of providing a direct button to cancel your subscription, a person must chat with customer care advocate or call the company within certain business hours to cancel.
AOL. AOL did that.
Yeah. And it's like, we offer several ways to cancel your subscription. All of them difficult. Someone else says that in order to unsubscribe, you have to answer the CAPTCHA question. And again, it's about putting roadblocks up to make it that much more difficult to unsubscribe. Hidden fees in delivery receipts. Didn't clearly inform me about membership renewal charges. That's kind of a common one. It's frequently in very tiny type in somewhere. Tricked me into paying to file my taxes. Starts with a big word free, and then it's not. And then design my personal payments to be public by default. And that's something that's Venmo, by the way, I think.
Really?
Yeah, Venmo by default, things are public and people can see them.
So that, I mean, they're using that to say, hey, so-and-so bought, you know, dish soap. You can buy dish soap too. Is that where they're going with that?
You can look it up. You can also, you can make your payments private, by the way.
You just got to figure out where.
But you have to make sure that you turn that on. And you cannot make your connections private. So this is one of those things where they went and they found Joe Biden's Venmo. They found who he was connected to. Now, all of the purchases were private, so they couldn't see what purchases, but they could see who he was connected to and who he was kind of sending money to as well. So this is interesting, and I think this is important for kids to know and understand. I think they need to know that some of these things are out there and happening, and I think they need to understand the concepts that companies are using to convince them to do things. So,
yeah. Cool site.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. I just thought that was interesting as well. And important to know. It's kind of interesting just to flip through them as well. And again, they are collecting more, so you can report a pattern as well. One of the things you might want to report is you might want to report out on the Twitterverse.
Yeah, and actually there's going to be one of the things in here is going to be a way to report things out. So, but let's get started with the typical EduCelebrity, @EduCelebrity. Standardized test companies shouldn't be so worried about exam security. If students aren't bringing home their homework, I highly doubt they're itching to take on multiple choice questions and reading passages, which is perfectly true. Richard Byrne has a couple of them at RM Byrne. And this is where I think the audio thing comes in. Asynchronous audio breakout rooms. And he's got a couple of suggestions. One I really like and one that I've used with my students. And that's Synth. Now, his argument is, look, everybody's tired of sitting in a meeting, Zoom facing, Google meeting, whatever. Mm-hmm. What if you did asynchronous audio with the kids and then let them grab it and use it whatever time? Like, for example, my students are emailing me. We talked about this before the show. I've got a couple emails because apparently there's a tech issue going on in the district. And so the kids are panicked and they, you know, Mr. McGurr, can't get in. But they're telling me this at 11 o'clock at night, between 10:30 and 11 o'clock at night. You know, I didn't see 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. It was not going to happen for me. And but that's when they're up, and that's when they're talking with each other, and that's when they're getting work done. We did a thing several years ago with the school social worker, and I did a thing on bullying, and the we found out, discovered that our kids are actually active in forum discussions, online forum discussions. Mm-hmm. They are extremely active between midnight and 3 a.m. That's when mm-hmm. they want to talk. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, you could use something like Synth to then put stuff in there, you know, do your Synth thing, record, and then you could push it out as a podcast, and they just simply listen to it whenever their brains are ready to go for it and do some work. By the same token, Synth is free, and it generates a it does all the encoding, it does all the publishing and all that sort of thing, and your kids could be doing it as well and pushing audio out, and they could be using it as a way to demonstrate understanding. Now, I didn't know that this one existed, but apparently Flipgrid has an audio-only feature. Another one that he recommends is Flipgrid, but then turn on just the audio only and do your asynchronous online discussions doing an audio-only Flipgrid option. And, you know, some people said, why, or he's actually posted, why audio only? And he's got a number of different reasons here. The big one in my district is that my kids just don't turn on the cameras. They don't want anybody taking a picture of what them or their room looks like. And they're starting to open up some more. For example, one of them, I did not know this, but one of them apparently has a bunny hat. And when she pushes buttons or whatever, she can make the ears flop independently. And she can make that go all class long.
Kind of like a fidget spinner.
Yes, except it was a completely adorable. It was very cute.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell her that, but it was.
And there are a lot of kids that are just more comfortable with audio and not video. And if you think about it, there's a lot of people that are like, I don't want to see myself. You know, don't, you know. So that part's not unusual. That is also built into Moodle as well, right? Kids could record and have conversations back and forth, audio conversations back and forth as well.
Yeah, you could simply use the forum discussion board, and then in the Atto editor, they got a microphone link. You just simply click that and give an oral response. Mm-hmm. And I think I want to train my kids on how to do that so that going forward in the future, they could make that an option, or teachers can make that an option. And the kids could do it, right? But they would also give them, it would force them to, they can't just like say stuff and nobody knows it. Because once you stick it in that forum after that 30-minute editing period, it's mine, all mine. So, you know, it also forces some accountability for what folks say. I just noticed that the link to the Alternatives Google Expeditions is, oh, there it is. It does load up because it was going straight to Alice Keeler. And I was like, no, I got that one already. I like AR/VR. I cannot lie. And I've been exploring with it because I think it's a great opportunity for my students to travel. And my students can't travel, particularly a lot of my girls are not allowed to travel. Parents won't let them. You can't go so many miles away from family members because then there's all kinds of cultural rules that apply. It ain't worth it, right? So what I need to do is find a way to bring the world to them, because one of the things they don't know about is the world. So I'm very interested in this, and somewhere down below in the show notes, we will talk about it. But Google Expeditions is going to reach EOL end of life, I believe in June, and then they will no longer be supported.
Wow.
And Google Expeditions used to be a cheap alternative, quick and easy way for schools to pull in some AR/VR using like Android cell phones. And the cardboard face things where you could mm-hmm. you know, you slide the phone in.
But I found something similar.
Thank you, Google.
Do you want to know, are Google Expeditions free?
And this moment brought to you by
Yeah, I got caught by the old Google.
By the joys of living with technology.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Yeah, I bet you don't. anyway, so yes, it's like walking in a minefield. Next thing you know, you say something and it's like, oh, well, that's new information. I didn't know that, you know, the thing would do that. Also, by the way, just while we're rat-holing here, did you know that if you ask a HomePod a question and you ask the next question too soon, the other HomePod in the other room will answer for the one that's thinking or recovering from the answer it just gave you?
Wow.
And so you could just start popping all kinds of things all around the house, you know, with if you have several of these going on. And, you know, people could I have no idea why this is talking right now. So anyway, that's just another thing about that. But so Google Expeditions were supposed to be a good way to bring in VR, AR, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And Expeditions is going away. But Google is doing arts and culture, and they're doing an arts and culture app, which should include a lot of experiences that are part of the Google apps. Sites in VR is a free app that features immersive imagery of notable landmarks. And I would actually like to take and pull those in because Moodle has a 360 editor. And I'd like to be able to pull in pictures from 360 pictures from places and put those into the 360 photo editor. So I could actually structure my own tours inside Moodle and have the kids then, and I can drop my own pins in. I'm not relying on other people's pins because I can't control their language, for example. But I can then drop in my own pins and I could stage a tour. And so even though my girls can't go to those places, then I'm at least giving them the opportunity to bring those places in. I don't know that I can get that feature in like a headset where it's immersive, but it's better than the opportunity being zero. National Geographic's YouTube channel has a number of videos that are built in 360. Even when they jump cut from one thing to another, it's all 360. And down below, you can actually pick the scene you want in 360. If you pause the video, it'll let you cycle through and pick which scene you want to jump to just to look at the 360 stuff. And actually used, they did a Viking one. And I used that with my seventh graders a couple weeks ago. And they were playing it over and over and over again because you can change the perspective and see it from different angles. They ran the video, but they ran it from, you know, looking out the right side, or ran the video looking from the left, or looking up above, or looking down below. Like, for example, they go under a bridge. Well, they arced it up and they looked at, see, well, what's under the bridge. And I was reading someone else and they said, actually putting stuff, information on the ceiling is a great way to hide some secret stuff, like some Easter eggs for the kids, cause they never think to look up. Mm-hmm. City Walks is a website for virtual walking around dozens of cities, but I'm not necessarily sure. I mean, that, it could be used for schools, but not necessarily, I think, for every instance. There is something called Story Spheres I've heard about, never played with, and it's an alternative to Tour Creator, and you can make it using immersive VR stories and browse a gallery of stories made by other Story Spheres users. And I suppose if you teach the kids where to get the 360 pictures, then they can start building their own stories as well. That might be something to explore as well. So Larry Ferlazzo has 10 ways he'll be teaching differently in the new year. I don't want to do them all, but I do want to highlight a couple things that he posted. And one that I do that he mentioned is he always takes time in May and June to take stock of the year while things are fresh in his mind. I always take time in June, July, and August to revamp my classroom. And I know that's way too much time. And I know that because I've had relatives say, you're still working. Yes, I'm still working. You know, they ain't paying for the, I know they're not paying me. I got it. This is for me. I want an easier life during the school year, but that never, yeah, I know it never happens. That's just, you know, it's my dream. Just let me, you know, live it for a minute. And then one of the things he does is he values student voice. And then he goes over the, he does a survey and has the kids give a response. And, And Moodle is a great way to integrate that into your practice by giving kids the opportunity to give you feedback. One of the things that we found this year is that our kids don't know how to, they are very, very, they're beginning, they're treating the adults like they work the counter of the McDonald's. And walk in and are, and so one of the things we need to do is we need to teach some social skills. You know, this is how you say that. This is how you do that. You know, you can't just, you're not putting an order in at the counter.
Right.
Yeah. So it's interesting. This is actually the link I posted in there is a part two. There's a part one and you can link to that, or there's a link to that in the, in his blog post. It's an Education Week post, actually. And but take a look at that. And then you might get some ideas for the way you end your year and what you do as far as reflection goes. Hey, AMLE is announcing a new member benefit. The Successful Middle School Online Course Series explores the characteristics of high-performing middle schools through 21 self-paced modules. Earn 4 contact hours while you learn, offered free to AMLE members. And I think one of the reasons they're doing that is because of the decline in middle-level education programs. I know in the state of Michigan, every university has officially closed their middle-level education program. I'm not even sure that they have one or two classes that are specific for for middle-level ed anymore. And so this would fill that need, because I think in mid-level education, we need and want educators who really want to be in mid-level education, not those that have been sent there by administrators who are not happy, or people who are simply looking for any port in the storm. Adam Moeller, when I tell jokes on a Google Meet, no one laughs. I asked why, and they said, your jokes aren't remotely funny. That was for you.
Yes, thank you.
Don't forget hashtag MS Chat every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as Troy says, the Twitter never stops.
It doesn't. And one of the things that's never gone away is medieval stuff. So you've got a Gone Medieval link here as well.
I did. So History It has a new podcast out. This is an audio podcast. And it's a new series from the History It family. Focuses on the medieval. It should be useful for your seventh grade peeps, because that fits right tight in with a lot of seventh grade curriculums. Great resource, listing resource. And of course, if you're using Moodle, then you can also throw in some formative questions along the way. And do make sure you listen to it first, because I know he's got some other stuff that he's done. Particularly one historian, Mary Beard, swears like a sailor, not something that is safe for work. So please do listen to them first. But a lot of his stuff is really good when you're teaching that ancient civ stuff. Well, and other stuff too, but this would be for the ancient civ course. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you might have to translate some of the stuff from the Middle Ages, because, the language is very different. And the culture translator is translating our teens for us. And they have a slang of the week this week that is main character energy. This is not one I've heard the kids use yet. But it's romanticizing your own life and embracing the spotlight to the point where you can imagine that you are the person that everyone else's quote-unquote storyline revolves around. Which is like straight up my seventh grader's alley, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, that's a big part of middle school, isn't it?
Yeah. So it can be used sincerely or ironically. For example, I'm not worried about whether my crush likes someone else or my friends forget to invite me to places. I'm only here for the people who recognize my main character energy. We'd like to hear the sound of that just once in the classroom and have them talking about the teacher being the main character energy.
That's right. And when you are the main character energy, you may have kind of a soundtrack, right?
Soundtrack. Ooh, I see where this is going. All right, soundtrack. Talk to me.
By By the way, did you have you ever picked a like your walk up song, or have you picked like your soundtrack for? Yes.
My walk up song, I got it already. Matter of fact, we talked about this before the show. My principal is harassing me because I buy stuff for my classroom, and he apparently wants to buy stuff for my classroom. I don't understand it. I think there might be some medication involved because no one's offered to buy me stuff for my class.
Sean is going like, before.
And
I
so
have...
I'm taking it.
I have 25 years of experience. I'll try to edit that part out. No, I won't. Sean is going, I have a plethora of experience where people don't buy anything for me.
Right. Yeah. This is unusual. I don't know what to do with your statements. Right. So I asked for a desk. I have a desk that at the front of the room, I put at the front of the room, and then I have a lectern, and I don't like the lectern. I hate it. I need it. And I want it, but I don't like the way the top is, and I am too cheap to, like, go get another one. So he's offering. So there's a company that makes a desk area. You know, it's about 2.5-3 feet, which is all I really need. Mm-hmm. And then it has a podium attached to it, right? So it's a desk podium thing. Mm-hmm. And it would be perfect for what I want to use with it, with the kids getting up and being able to put their notes on the podium and work off of that while they do their presentations. And it's got wheels on it, so I can like get it out of the way when I want to get it out of the way, and you know, have kids, you know, doing stuff in the room where you slide all the tables back and move all the chairs and have a nice open space to work on things. And where was I going with this? Anyways, so, oh, walk-up music. Yes, walk-up music. So yes, I have my walk-up music. It's that, you know, the Universal Studios right before the movie. Da-da-da, bum-bum, da-da-da-da. So that little fanfare that comes on?
Yes.
That's what I want walk up to that podium and I begin to dispense knowledge.
There you go.
Sorry, I just entered the dream world again.
That's all right.
I'll be back in a little bit.
Yes. Well, while you're doing that, the students may want to have some background sounds to help them focus as well. And Eric Kurtz over at Control-Alt-Achieve has listed 8 ambient sites that students can use that are free to... provide some ambient background. So you could use these for your classroom, or even more importantly to me is teach the kids to use them, make them available for the kids. And since a lot of them will be having devices anyway, have them bring in their own set of headphones. And if you're a middle school person, you know why you want them to bring in their own set of headphones and plug them in. And utilize the ambient sounds to keep their focus. And hopefully those sites stay around and are not deprecated like Google has a tendency of doing.
Yeah.
The Google graveyard is massive, and there's a few more things that are coming to the graveyard.
This is where we talk about walk-up music. This is where we should put in the coffin dance music, right? You know, because entering the Google graveyard.
Be the funeral Google march, would it not?
Yeah, there's a YouTube video called Coffin Dance. It's a perfect music for this. So entering the graveyard, a Google graveyard, Google Chrome apps are going to be end of life in June of 2022. Android Things, I'm not an Android user, so I'm not entirely sure. But Android Things is going to be end of life for January of 2022. Google Hangouts is end of life for next month. Just not too far away, June of 2021. Google Expeditions, of course, end of life for June of 2021. Google Tour Creator. Now, it says end of life, June 2021, but Google is supposed to be rolling Tour Creator into Google Earth. So I don't know how much like going away it is so much as it is a mergers and acquisitions instead of like heading to the graveyard. And then Google Poly, which was very closely associated with Google Tour Creator, that's going to be end of life for June of 2021 as well. I put a link in there to killedbygoogle.com and thank them for the updates and the information.
Mm-hmm. Really and quick. There, you've got a whole bunch of alternatives to Google Poly for 360 resources listed here as well. And I would encourage people to head over to the website and check some of those out in terms of what work is going to work for them as well. There are some additional resources over on the website this week, including a write-up by a superintendent about why they have a mask mandate. And I thought this was really well written and something that I would share as well. And also the idea of girls in STEM and why hidden classroom dynamics come into play there. Another article that I thought was really, really good. So, again, you can head over to middleschoolmatters.com and click on those links. Check out the wonderful jokes and visual jokes that are there as well. While you're online, we really would appreciate it if you'd give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or head over to Stitcher or Overcast or Pocket Cast or whatever cast that you use and pick up the show. There are links to a variety of them on the website, middleschoolmatters.com. But we would appreciate it, and it helps keep us kind of on the search results as well. We are not planning on doing the subscription model, by the way. I know that iTunes is going to a offering subscription model as well. And so far we have no plans on leveraging that. So if you could, we would greatly appreciate it if you'd just kind of give us a paycheck by letting people know that we're around and encouraging other people to listen to us. And send us feedback. Send us an email that says, hey, I really like this. I'd like to see more of that, that kind of thing. We would appreciate that as well. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care.